Steve Barkley Ponders Out Loud is sponsored by the AAIE Institute for International School Leadership. Preparing educators for the unique challenge of international school leadership through online courses led by international school leaders. Learn more at AAIEinstitute.org.
Hello and welcome to the Steve Barkley Ponders Out Loud podcast. For the last 35 years, I've had the opportunity to learn with educators at all levels, both nationally and internationally. In each of the coming episodes, I'll explore my thoughts and my learning on a variety of topics connected to teaching, learning, and leading. Thanks for listening in. Jim Knight and the TLC Conference. I recently had the opportunity to be a learner and a presenter at Jim Knight's Teaching and Learning Conference. And I contacted Jim and asked him if he'd jump on the podcast with us to do a little debrief of the conference. So, Jim, welcome.
Nice to be here.
So, Jim, one of the first things that jumped out that I was going to ask you to respond to is the your choice of courage as the theme for the conference.
Well, even before I go to that, Steve, I just want to thank you for coming to the conference. I've been grateful for our ongoing dialogue now more than a decade. I think we first read your book around 2004, 2005. So I've been real grateful for it. It's great to have you there, and I'm excited to have you come next year. So thanks.
I'm looking forward to it already. I saw that you already got the registration form up. That's terrific.
One of our keynoters is already locked down. A lot of our presenter, Bradley Statz, who wrote a book called Never Stop Learning, which is a powerful book. He's one of our people. So next year's theme is Keep Learning. But this year the theme was courage. And I suppose I chose it for a lot of reasons. But the first and most obvious reason is that there are forces at work in our culture globally towards hatred and fascism. And you can see it in Europe, you can see it in North America, where we, it's an us against them culture, where we denigrate others, we denigrate women, we denigrate minorities. And I think I wanted to encourage people to have the courage to say no to hate. Hate manifested in racism or rape culture or a number of different ways in which people in power diminish others, or they gang up against others, which you'd have to call a fascist tendency. That's what happened before the Second World War. And that force is happening around the world now. So the first thing I'd say about courage is we need the courage to say no to hate. But the second thing I'd say is we need to say no to hate in a way that's not hateful. And that also takes courage, because courage is our capacity to do things that aren't that easy for us to do, I suppose. And the easiest thing to do when we're confronted with things that we really don't like, that are bad for society, is to respond. When we're confronted with hate, the easiest thing to do is respond hatefully. And that doesn't move us forward. If we do exactly what we're criticizing the other person for doing, we don't go anywhere positive.
We see a ton of that. That the response is as bad as the initial problem.
So it takes courage to see beyond our natural reactions and try to respond in a way that actually promotes a better world. And that is what I would say, the courage to respond in a loving way, which is to see beyond hate. But then I think all improvement involves some kind of courage. If I want to get better as a presenter, I have to look at the video of myself presenting. If we want to get better as an organization, we have to look at the data on the impact we're having in terms of helping people become more effective coaches. The teacher wants to get better at how they reach out to kids and make a difference in kids' lives. They've got to look at the video or gather data on what's happening and courageously say, this is what's working. I want to do more of this, but I want to do less of this. We have to have the courage to sort of face reality in all kinds of ways. So to me, courage was a rich concept, provoked by the times, but kind of universal in its application.
So, Jim, are you suggesting it takes courage to learn?
Sometimes. I think some learning happens, it's just pure pleasure. You know, sometimes you get wrapped up in something, and it's really, oh, I remember when I first learned how to use the internet, you know, Netscape. I was just kind of, this is so much fun, and every bit of time on the internet, didn't realize I was going to waste so much of my life when I was first learning it, but at first it was just really fun. I think, you know, watching kids learn how to read and how their worlds expand, I don't know that that takes courage, but the courage to become a better father or a better husband, the courage to really, really improve in core things, especially as an adult, that's definitely a part of learning. I think
courage to change.
And the courage to face reality.
So the learning might be the piece that causes me to confront the courage. I learn that I could be better. I could perform stronger. I question a current behavior because of what I've learned, and now I've got to implement the courage to go through the change.
Yeah, well, I'd say that I just wrote an article that just came out this week in Ed Leadership called the No Learning Zone, or maybe it's the Zero Learning Zone. Anyway, something like that. But it's about how we put all these barriers in our ability to learn by blaming others, and by avoiding reality. And in that sense, learning takes courage. We have to look at what's happening, and we have to step out of our comfort zone.
I'm wondering, Jim, if you'd like to mention a couple of the keynoters that you had and how you saw them speak to the theme, and maybe what you personally took away from their presentations.
Well, I'll just sort of go through the schedule, I guess. The first keynoter was Pedro Noguera. What I like about what Pedro says is he understands that engagement is not a trivial thing, that engagement is actually an equity issue. And if we want to keep kids in school, we want kids to flourish in school, we want our schools to inspire kids to be better learners, then we have to engage them, but we have to understand that engagement is more than just, are they doing what they're supposed to be doing? Engagement is cognitive engagement, that their brains are fully engaged by the activity, and emotional engagement, as Pedro said, which means that they feel a connection with the school, they feel safe there, they see the purpose of the learning, they feel part of that community. So what I took away from his talk, amongst many other things, though, but in particular, was that engagement is not a trivial thing. Engagement is core to equity because kids drop out when they don't feel engaged. And then Principal Wayman, Linda Cliette Wayman, gave her talk. And the central to her talk was the idea of, I love every student every day. And she's given a really fantastic TED talk.
I went and listened to it based on your recommendation. It is very powerful.
You know, what struck me was the strength of her character. I mean, her speech was beautiful and inspiring and encouraging and honest. You know, she talked about the courage to be a coach, how she started out as a coach before she became, now kind of 2 million people have seen her video of the TED Talk about being a principal in a tough school. But what struck me about her was our conversation afterwards and my time with her, is that she really does live out this belief that I love everybody and love is central to her. It is the thing that drives her through life, and it's her driving force. And it was kind of a beautiful thing to be around her character and hear what she had to say.
I certainly felt the courage that she has in the way she approaches what she has to cause the school to be to serve the students.
And that courage is because she loves the kids so much. I mean, it's not rhetoric to say I love the kids. For her, it is. It is her day-to-day experience. And so because she loves the kids so much, she'll walk through walls to make it happen. She cares so deeply, you know. And so when you're around that kind of character, it's a powerful thing. And then next morning we had Chip Heath. And he talked about Chip and Dan Heath's new book, The Power of Moments. One thing that I took away from his presentation, I really wish I did he recorded it because I couldn't believe how masterfully he used all the elements of the presentation to communicate this idea that there are certain moments that are really powerful. And I've always believed that, going back to when I was an English student reading Wordsworth, and he talked about the spots of time. These times when life is richer and fuller and really memorable. And so I thought what was cool about Chip's presentation was that he gave us those moments while he talked about the power of moments. There were some powerful things that happened during his presentation to say, this is, I mean, if you wanted to connect Chip with Pedro Nogueira, if we give kids these kind of powerful moments like the ones he described, they're going to be more engaged, they're going to be more connected with the school, more involved.
I recently repeated a comment that he made that is still tugging at me, and that was that on average, people report having had three of those powerful moments in a K-12 education. I mean, you know, pretty shocking. And as I thought through my own, most of mine were extracurricular rather than school classroom oriented.
I couldn't come up with one. He said, how many of you have, he asked us to raise our hand, how many of you have at least one of those moments, three of those moments, more than six? And I sat there, and maybe it's because I was a little snot as a kid, I don't know, but I couldn't really remember one inside school where I said, that's that kind of power. Yep. And I'm with him. I think, you know, what if we just said, kids have to have those kind of moments at least twice a year in school. We want to make sure they have things they never forget every year in their classes.
For a teacher, at a minimum, to say, no kid will leave after a year with me without having one, that there's a commitment.
Right. So his presentation was great on so many levels. And then Kristen Anderson's talk on self-efficacy, and I was so impressed at the way in which she brought together what the research says about collective efficacy and self-efficacy. And Kristen, for a long time, like Principal Wayman, has impressed me by the strength of her character. She is a person who builds up other people's efficacy, just in her affirmative way of working with people. But what struck me about the presentation she gave was how she was able to combine anecdotes with research to say, we really need to make sure that teachers have self-efficacy, and we structure the environment and the learning opportunities for teachers and students. But in particular, what I took away from it was teachers. If they're going to have collaborative efficacy, they have to believe in themselves as well.
And that's a really powerful piece for coaches to be focused on, that they're building that.
Absolutely, I think that's a really good point. And then the last one was Joellen Killian. I loved Joellen's closing, and she talked about sort of how our approach could shape the way we coach, and different types of approaches would lead to different kinds of coaching. But I thought Joellen just had this calm and beautiful way of articulating how coaching is a bit like a journey, and different people bring different things to it. And the importance of recognizing how who we are informs how we coach. What's the big thing I took away from what she had to say?
Yeah, I got caught up in her explanation of the three of heart, hand, and mind being the approaches that drive the coach. And I'm still processing this. And Joellen's agreed to come on and do a podcast with me where she talks through it a little bit more. Because it struck me that it's one, identifying my style as a coach, but then I also think causing me to expand outside my style when I sense the greater opportunity for the person I'm coaching from me looking at this session with them through a different lens than the one that is my natural lens.
You know, I've always felt that coaches have to be mindful of their personality type. I know we don't like these terms anymore for some reason, but that if I'm an introvert, well, probably a better example is if I'm an extrovert, I'm a real cheerleader kind of person and I want to perk people up, and I'm working with an introvert who really would rather just read an article and have a conversation a little bit later on, my cheerleader kind of approach probably isn't going to work with that person. I have to adjust my style to fit that person's personality type. And while that's not central to what Joellen's there, it was kind of implicit in your conversation.
I think the the implicit part is I tend to get my satisfactions being more in one of those styles than the other.
And
I kind of connect it to that. I often use the description with teachers that at times our strengths can become our problem. So that strength that I have in the classroom, I can rely on too much. So I'm the storyteller who tells too many stories, or the organizer who gets things too organized. And so that's why I got caught in Joellen's piece of, if I can become conscious of the path that I tend to take on this coaching journey, it can assist me in being open to meeting other people's needs and not get too hung up on my own sense of satisfaction.
Right. That's what I would take away too. I think that's exactly right. The more we're aware of how the approaches shape what we do, and the more we can recognize different kinds of approaches, I think the more effective we can be, for sure.
So Jim, as you look back on the conference, I'm wondering if there's a point or two that you would toss out as either having been reinforcing of where your thinking currently is, or stretched you with a new insight to be considering.
Well, I think that the theme of love kept coming up over and over again. Was the message I tried to communicate at the start, but I kept hearing it in so many different ways. And love is such a funny word. It sounds so soft, and, you know, it's been, if any word has been trivialized in Western culture, it's probably that word. But the more specific definition I use is one from Dallas Willard, who's a professor at USC, and he said love is engaging the will for the good of another, or for the benefit of another. And I think, you know, that's what we need to move forward. Is a courageous willingness to move beyond our self-interest and do what's good for the other person, do what's good for the greater good. And part of that is moving away from hate. Hate's addictive. It feels not good, but it feeds the same kind of part of our brain, I guess, that addiction to sugar or alcohol or drugs or sex or whatever it might be. It's the same thing that's going on. It feeds and grows in a pernicious way, and it's not productive. And so moving beyond the self to an attitude towards others is a way of moving away from our addiction to hatred. And so those were things that kept kind of coming up as I listened to what's out. I guess one other thing I'd say is it's exciting to see how coaching is evolving. You know, you look at the different people now speaking about, you know, back when we did TLC 13 years ago, it was hard to find people to come and talk about coaching. It was no problem to pretty much bring in all the experts because there weren't that many. But now it's really hard to even get a slice of it because it's evolved and grown so much. And, you know, instructional coaching has become expected or seen as a powerful and popular way of making change happen. So to some extent, watching 800 people listen to all these different experts was a validation of the power of coaching.
You did a great job of having a really broad spectrum of, quote, coaching experts, coaching authors that allowed participants to, to listen from different directions. And I think that's an important part for the growth of instructional coaches.
I think so, too. I think, the idea of the conference initially was that we would bring together people we wanted to learn from and have them learn from each other. Now, as it's become bigger, it's harder to do that. We try to find other structures to make that happen, like, getting together in the evenings or going out after the conference. But we really want it to be a sort of a melting pot of ideas, a chance for us to all get better. Even though we may not agree, our disagreements will make us better. And to hide from those conversations lacks courage. You know, we have to have the courage to learn from each other.
Well, I wanted to thank you for the opportunity to take part. I had some great learning from being able to be in the keynote sessions and also interacting with the participants. They were terrific in the sessions that I led. And they pushed me to walk away knowing I've got to do more work with what I'm doing on questioning. So I'm back into examining the writing I've done up till now and some of the thinking I've done up till now, and doing more recording of my sessions so that I can come back and unlock. I've always known that ability to ask the question was one of the important coaches' task, but I really got reinforced from the participants that I had the chance to work with.
Yeah, I always tell the hotels or the places where we do our conference, I always say, this is going to be the nicest group you've ever worked with right here, because the coaches, I think maybe part of it is they just feel our pain as presenters because they're change leaders too. So they're like, we'll cut you some slack. But they're always curious and
anxious to learn. Anxious to learn was the phrase I was going to add. Yeah. Well, Jim, I'm so grateful that I had this chance, and you've already extended to me the invitation to be at next year, so I will. But I'm going to suggest we don't wait till next year. Let's go a couple of months, and let's jump back on and do another conversation here and see where our paths have taken us in the meantime.
That'd be great. There are lots of things we're working on right now, so I'm always happy to get feedback on how we can make them better.
All right. Have a great day.
Take care. Thanks, Steve.
You bet. Bye-bye, Jim.
Bye.
Thanks for listening, folks. I'd love to hear what you're pondering. You can find me on Twitter at Steve Barkley, or send me your questions and find my videos and blogs at barkleypd.com.